And as I said before, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink. You know, you got to add that. Nor have I had a drink. You know about the two guys in Texas where one guy was at a meeting, and he said, "My name is Joe, I'm an alcoholic, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink in 20 years." And the other guy said, he says, "Joe, I saw you last night, you were drunk as a skunk." He says, "Yeah, but it wasn't necessary." You know? But I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. Right. So this is my birthday month. So if I make it to the 25th, I'll have 32. So not a record around here. My sponsor has like 57 or 58, and, you know, but it gives you a little experience, you know. It's good to have experience instead of, I used to have a lot of ideas. You should have called me before I came in here. I was very smart. You're going to have to trust me on that. I have degrees telling me how brilliant I am. But I came in here and they dumbed me down, so, you know, because experience, you know, alcoholics, you know, they're very smart people, you know. They'll tell you all sorts of things, you know, they'll tell you all sorts of things that are brilliant, you know, right before they cart them off to jail or indict them or they get served with divorce play papers, or it's just their lives are in the toilet, you know. But somewhere along the line, you know, you start realizing, somewhere along the line, if you're an alcoholic, the problem is reality catches up with your thinking, you know what I mean? And that's a terrible, you know, that's basically what happened to me. I stopped drinking when the consequences of my drinking came at me faster than my ability to lower my standards, you know. And if you're an alcoholic, no matter how bad your life falls apart, you're smart enough to keep up with how bad it is so you can sort of lower your standards and say, this isn't so bad, you know. You're just sharp enough to convince yourself that you're not full of shit and that you're not a bum, that you really should be president of the United States. They just haven't recognized you yet or something like that. But unfortunately, things got so bad for me. It came at me so quickly that I just didn't have, and my mind stopped. My mind wasn't where I had like two neurons working. They were waving goodbye to each other, you know, and it came at me so fast, I just wasn't quick enough to sidestep the truth. And one day I looked in the mirror and I said, who the hell am I kidding? My life is over. I can't stop drinking. I'll never be able to do this thing. And, you know, that's a horrible, wonderful thing to happen. That's the jumping off place. They talk about it in the book, the jumping off place, where you know loneliness as few do. And but it is good to be here with you guys because you're alcoholics. You're like my brothers and sisters. I read a book once. It was non-AA material where it said very often you find that your real brothers and sisters are not, your real relatives are not blood related. That you find your real brothers and sisters, and they're not blood related. And you know, one of the things that happens, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm just going to share my experience. You know. It's like my sponsor said I shared with you last time. He told me, he says, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk away with an experience. And, you know, if I'm standing outside the jungle, and I'm going to go in the jungle, and I have to get to the other side of the jungle where there's snakes and poisonous things and quicksand and all that sort of stuff. And there's some guy there who's a Harvard graduate who knows everything about the jungle because he's read everything about the jungle. He's brilliant about the jungle. And there's some guy standing there and he hasn't graduated third grade. And, you know, his clothes don't fit. And he's all dirty. And they say, well who's him? Well, that's Zeke. He's been here for 40 years and he's gone through the jungle about 50,000 times. And come out alive. Well, which guy are you going to take? You know, I'm going with Zeke. I ain't going with the Harvard guy. He's like gator bait, you know? I mean, I'm going with that deal. So I hung around with a lot of guys that were in the jungle. You know, a lot of guys like that. And I've been in the jungle for about 32 years. Working on myself, working with other people, watching alcoholics, you know, watching all the people that come in here and say, I'll never drink again, and then watching them drink and watching all the people saying, you don't understand, and then watching them drink, and watching all the people saying, you know, you have no business telling me that, and walking out of meetings and being pissed off and watching them drink. And I've seen a lot of people drink in Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years, 20 years. I've seen people in Alcoholics Anonymous blow their brains out. I've seen people in Alcoholics Anonymous who have 10, 15 years that are unhappy. They're not rocking in the fourth. Yeah, I've seen enough in myself and other people. So I'm not, and you know something, when you see a lot of stuff, you don't even have to be smart. You just know. When you see people like walking off a cliff, around, if you're an alcoholic, about the after you've seen them walk off the cliff about 3,000 times, you pretty much get it down Cliff Bad. Cliff Bad. You know, my sponsor once said to me, Bob Sullivan, my first sponsor, I've had three sponsors, I'll never forget this. I was 5 years sober. 5 years sober. This is a true story. This is a true story. This is the great thing about AA. You know, it says our stories, this goes in a general way, we used to be like, what happened? It's our stories. It's our testimony. That's the important thing. That's why I think that's what really is attractive to, as far as speakers are concerned and listening to AA, because alcoholics are so full of shit that they recognize bullshit immediately. So I think what happens is, so they don't like to be preached to, they don't want some guy telling them stuff they know is not true. So what happens is, as you tell your story, if you can be as transparent as possible, even if you don't plan, you just tell them the truth, people sort of, alcoholics can discern phony balonies, you know what I mean, from somebody who's done. So what happens is, all you got to do a good age talk is be sincere, right? And you learn how to fake that, you got it made, you know, but I mean, just be sincere and tell the truth and tell what happened. I don't need notes. I was there when it happened. You know what I mean? And people somehow sense, this guy's telling me the truth. Because since we are like brothers and sisters, before I came in here, you know how an alcoholic thinks before they come in here, nobody understands. Mm-hmm. What's the use of talking? You could never understand. You could only stand, if you understood all the nuances, all the things I've been through, everything that's happened to me, maybe you could understand, but you could never understand me, so what's the use of talking? Because nobody will understand me, because I am so unique, and my problems are so unique, and everything about me is so unique, that nobody could understand me, and I can't talk to them anyway, so I just sort of live within my brain with my problems, which you're going to have to trust me on this, doesn't work out too well. And then you come to alcoholics and people start talking around you. You say, man, this guy's just like me. That guy's just like me. Yeah, I was like this. As a matter of fact, you learn from the smart people and the wise people, and you learn from the crazies. That's how you learn you're crazy, right? Some guy says something at a meeting, and you look at him and you say, that guy is crazy. And then a little voice says, man, I thought like that. You know what I mean? That's how you learn. You see, if somebody tells you you're crazy, you'll fight. You'll say, I'm not crazy. You don't understand me. But you hear some guy who is crazy, and you say he's crazy, and then all of a sudden a little voice comes up and he says, you know, you did that thing too. You know, he says, man, I'm like nuts. You know, you start having a lower opinion of yourself, which is probably a good thing, because the first step in getting out of jail is knowing you're in jail in the first place. The first thing you figure out that there's something wrong with you is you know there's something wrong with you. And since we're in denial, since we're blinded to that deal, since part and parcel of the disease of alcoholism is no matter how smart, we're like idiot savants. You know what an idiot savant is? That's a guy that can do all sorts of numbers in his brain, you know, but he can't wipe his ass. You know, I mean, a guy who is a brilliant composer, okay, but doesn't know how to take a shower. You know, it's somebody who's we may be great at earning money, we may be a great singer, we may be a great actress, you understand? But in all other areas of life, we're just stupid. We just don't get it, you know? But what happens is, since we can earn money, or we can go to a job, or we can do certain things that where the world says we're a success, we start thinking that we're okay as our life is being destroyed around us. And, you know, and we don't see that stuff, that blind spot, and we have that other problem is, we don't like people talking to us or criticizing us or pointing out things anyway, because we sort of hate ourselves. And that's why men and women drink, because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Men and women are essentially restless, irritable, discontented people like me. You know, if I, you know, so you're always saying, well, if I only had this, if I only had, I was an if only, or a yes butter, if I had a new wife, if I had a new girlfriend, if the world would only change, if people would only drive properly, if Miami was only better, if we only had a different president, if I only had more money, if I only had a different guy, so I was constantly looking for that thing to happen to make me okay. And you know what happens when the thing happens to make you okay? You're okay for a nanosecond. So you start thinking, you got the new car and you feel good for what, a week? And then what happens is all of a sudden you're looking at, the car has a flat tire, and I got a new car out there, and it happens to be a Mercedes, and it's not a new car, it's a used car, but it's a nice one. And so my son-in-law, Armando, he pointed out, he said, he went to the car and he pointed out that on one of the wheels, on one of the tires, the Mercedes emblem is missing. Well, you know, off I go, you know. But that's the healthy part of it, I guess. I guess I'm healthy today because I'm going to a lot of meetings and doing stuff, because it did bother me. I'm going to confess that it bothered me for about 30 seconds. I'm over it. I'm using it at a meeting now. to make a point, you know. I would have had to go out and spend money I didn't have, you know. I maxed out all my credit cards buying things I didn't need, right? With money I didn't have. That's why I use a credit card, by the way. Because if you had the money, you take it out of your pocket, you just pay it, you know. You know, people want to live a lifestyle that they're not honestly entitled to, you know, so they make believe that they're millionaires because they live by millionaires because they borrow other people's money, and then they go to discussion meetings and complain about their finances. So, you know, but that was me. I was spending money I didn't have to buy things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like. So, I mean, God forbid, you know, because I'm a piece of crap, but, you know, my car tells other people that I'm not a piece of crap and maybe I'll get laid or something if a girl sees it. So I would have to run out and spend $300 to get that little Mercedes thing. You understand what I'm saying? Because it would just be bothering me, and, you know, and then I would go to a meeting and talk about how I got money problems. You know, and I'd have some sort of stupid sponsor who'd say, I can solve that. And I'd say, solve it? How do you solve it? He says, you know, earn more or spend less. So I had time to get another sponsor on that one, you know. And, yeah, I'd tell you stupid things like that. So in any event, so this is actually all going to talk. I'm going to eventually talk about the fourth step. I'm actually talking about the fourth step now. You just don't realize it. But you'll realize it by the time I'm done. This all has to do with the fourth step because it all has to do with crazy thinking. You know, and after you turn your will and your life over to God and you don't even know what he's about, but you do it anyway because you don't want to drink, then it's time to work on the real alcoholism because you think alcoholism is drinking. But after you've been around for 18 months or 2 years or whatever it is, you realize that it's not to do with drinking because one day you wake up and you realize you're crazy. You know, you go to a bunch of meetings, you know what I mean? You talk to a couple of people, you know, something happens in your life like a bounce check or a boyfriend or a girlfriend or something like that, and somebody to cuckold, and you start, you know, the window starts opening up in your mind, and one day it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, your thoughts are coming at you at 3,000 miles per hour. They're all bad thoughts about yourself and other people, and you know it can't be alcohol. It can't be alcohol because you haven't had a drink in 18 months or a year or 6 months. You say, what's going on? I'm crazy. Like I saw Tommy H. today. I sponsored Tommy. He's a wonderful guy, and I told him, he's got like 29 years now, and I told him, I said, Tommy, you know, I was there. I said, I got that story. He gives me this great story. I said, Tommy called me up. He came in, and I'm not going to tell you the whole story about the thing, but he came in, and when he was about a week sober, he was flying high. He loved AA. He took AA like a duck takes the water. And he called me up about a week or two sober, and he was heartbroken. He was heartbroken. We were talking about this day. He said, I remember that. He was heartbroken because he hadn't had a drink in 2 weeks, but he was going nuts. He was going, anybody, you got, a lot of you guys are alcoholics. I don't. Anybody ever find themselves going crazy? Yeah. Okay, so I'm not the only one. So what happened? He was going crazy. Who knows, whatever, you know, something happened, somebody looked at him funnier, you know, somebody didn't return a phone call, you know, like the two psychiatrists that cross themselves in the hall, one says hello, and the other one says, I wonder what he meant by that, you know, it's just something, you know, it says in the book, it says the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, that means real or imagined, that means imaginary shit, you know, what does it say, we just can't handle anything, you know, that's what it says. It says we can't handle anything. That's why we can't manage our own lives. Do you understand what this book says? Forget about me. This is my opinion. You know what this book says about alcoholics? It says you can't manage your own life. How do you like that one? You're scared of everything that's going on. Oh, by the way, it says you're absolutely scared of everything. Yes, that I know you're not scared of everything. You ever worry? Anybody ever worry about anything? Listen to me. I got a flash for you. That's fear. I know if you're a man, you say, I'm scared of anything. But every time you complain to me about anything, anytime you think of anything that makes you feel bad, anytime you worry or you're anxious about anything, that's fear. That's why they say fear is the closer threat of your lives, because 99% of the thoughts of the people in this room is fearful. That's what you think about. Because if you weren't thinking about fearful stuff, you just wouldn't be thinking at all. It's true. But here's the difference. Yeah, I know, you're not gonna believe this, but I'm gonna just say it. I'm just throw it out there. When you're not scared, when you don't have fear, when you get to that rocket in the fourth dimension, experience much better. When you don't have fear, then you no longer have to control. And when you no longer have to control, then you no longer have to manage, or push people around. And when that happens, you really don't really have to think. And you would be surprised how easy life becomes when you don't think. You'd be shocked. It becomes really easy. You know, when you feel like going to the bathroom, you go to the bathroom. When you're hungry, you eat. You know, when you're tired, you go to sleep. Everything else sort of fills in for itself. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of stuff you got to do. So fear really is the corrosive thread, but we don't know we're in fear because our alcoholic life, as it says in the book, seems the only normal one. So when you're always worried and worried about different things and different stuff happening and fetching about that and wondering what's going to happen, and that's the way you've lived from the time you were a paramecium, you know what I mean? Until now, you don't look at it like fear. That's just the way you are. Mm-hmm. That's just the way you think. Yeah. You don't know there's another way of thinking. It's like when you're a drinker. You know, I before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't envision life without drinking. I thought everybody drank. I could never envision not drinking. And then one day, you know, because I was living inside a box. You know, the box you live in, the box I lived in, you see, I'm inside this box. You gotta learn to think outside the box. It's so hard to think. See, the box I lived in was this little box, and everything I knew, everything I thought was true, and everything I thought was right, and all my ideas were inside this box. You understand what I'm saying? It's inside this box. And everything I didn't know was outside the box. And you know what I discovered? There was a lot more outside the box than inside the box. And, you know, I have people that come to my office. I'm an attorney because they don't come to me unless they have a problem. And they come to the office and this is how it works. They say to me this. They tell me this problem. You know, my wife's leaving me. My husband's leaving me. You know, I was arrested. Whatever the heck they tell me. They tell me this long story. And after they tell me the story, most of which I know are lies and misunderstandings. They don't have the idea. But anyway, after they tell me the story, maybe you've done this before in your life, or maybe this has happened to you. They ask me my opinion, so I give them my opinion, okay, based upon the story they tell me. And then they say this. He says, oh, well, there's something I didn't tell you. And I say, well, what's that? He says, well, I shot the canary. You shot the canary? He says, I shot the canary. And I said, well, that changes everything. You shot the flipping canary. Well, then forget about what I said, blah, 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 and I give him a different opinion, right? Because he's added something, right? So I give him a different opinion. He says, well, there's another thing I didn't tell you. After that, the mongoose died. I said, the mongoose died? You didn't tell me the mongoose died. That's important. Then I got to change. So as you add more information, you understand? The results, what you have to do, it sort of changes. And alcoholics who have all these old ideas, most of them are wrong, but they lived on them all their lives, like that nobody understands me, or I'm different, or, you know, or I can't stop drinking, or I can't, you know, whatever old ideas you have, based upon the book you read and the stuff you've seen, and, you know, most of the stuff we've seen out there, we filter out. You know, I told you that story, I think I told you the story about my first wife who said to me, I was 5 years sober, and, this is about no, I wasn't sober. I was married 5 years, and I came out, and she said, you know, come home drunk. And I had a wife and a beautiful child, and, you know, house and everything like that. And she said, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. She just sort of laid it on me. I think I told her, you come home drunk. She just looked me in the eye, just like she's dropping off the mail. You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. And, you know, and I was a division chief in the state's attorney's office. I was earning decent money. You know, I was, you know, by all intents and purposes, You know, I was doing well. You know, I mean, had you had asked me on the street, how are you doing? I would have told you I was doing well. I was doing great. I would have told you that if you asked me or not. But as Ray O'Keefe used to say. And but she looked at me and she said, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I get in my car. I drive 3 blocks. I stop at a red light. I said, what the hell do you mean by that? I mean, I'm not a stupid guy, you know. And the sentence is pretty straightforward, declaratory statement. And he says, what the hell did she mean by that? I was baffled. I didn't understand. What could she possibly mean by that? And What is this? First it's Jeffrey last week, and now it's you? It's okay. I don't mind you going to sleep. Just don't snore, okay? So here's the deal. Yeah, okay, so. But in any event, so she says, but I didn't know, you know, and of course that night I came home, and what I've learned from that, which is true, this is true about me, so since it's true about me, I'm sure it's true about you. Because what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, I found, you know, my box sort of expanded because my information expanded. Because I used to think there's nobody like me. And now I realize that everybody in AA is exactly like me. As a matter of fact, the more they say to me, the more sponsees say to me, I'm nothing like you, the more I know they're exactly like me. Because that's what I would say. You know what I mean? They're defiant. They're arrogant. They think they know everything. You know what I mean? And that's I said that the more you think, because that's why we love each other. That's why these rooms work. Because you sit there and say, that guy's just like me. You know what I mean? In a weird way. Maybe not in all the personality ways and stuff like that. A little differences as far as the way we look and everything. But sort of like the way our mind works and everything like that. So that's what I learned, that when alcoholics, just our thinking, that when an alcoholic hears, sees, or is told something he doesn't like, he gets upset. He gets mad. You know, he discounts it. He doesn't see it. So that's why it's entirely possible to read this entire big book, to read all the information, and not get anything from it except a couple of things, you know what I mean? And not even see it until... I have people that come up to me after, because I like to read the big book, and I like to quote it, and they'll come up to me and they'll say, man, I loved it when you said that part. It was unbelievable. Blew me out. I said, you mean when I read from the big book? He said, yeah, when you read that, and they'll be in like 5-10 years. I'll read something from the big book. They'll say, man, that was unbelievable. What page is that on? And I'll tell them what page it is. I said, that was unbelievable. He said, you see, that was great. I said, you mean when I read verbatim from the big book? He says, yeah. I said, well, that's in the big book. He says, yeah, but it's the way you read it. And I know what they mean. What they really mean, they don't realize what they mean, is I read that before. I read it 50 times. I just never saw it. Because it was uncomfortable. I didn't like it. I didn't understand it. So I threw it away. And it was the most important thing in the book. I didn't even look at the information. But when you said it, the way you said it, how you said it, and the way you fed it, now it's true. And so when you're dealing with a mind, an alcoholic mind, because it says the alcohol is really a symptom of our disease, our real disease centers in our mind, not our body. When you're dealing with a mind that throws away or defends itself against any information that's going to actually change it and make it better, and instead hang on to the old ideas that make you comfortable, because the result is nil, that we get let go of those, you're ultimately going to drink again or if not drink, be miserable, because you're not really getting weller, because you're not curing the disease of alcoholism. All you did was stop drinking. And so the reason you drank, the disease isn't cured. So what happens? What happens? So you get in trouble with sex. So you get in trouble with pornography. So you get in trouble with relationships. You get in trouble with food. You get in trouble with a million other things, and you're unhappy, and you don't know why, because you're going to AA and you're not drinking, because you're not really recovering from alcoholism. You're not really doing that deal. And if anybody comes in your face or talks to you or says something, this is the reason why. And it's uncomfortable to you, you turn your back and you leave. And the longer you're sober, the worse it is, because you can tell yourself, well, I've been sober 10 years, who the hell he is. You can use the time you have in AA as an excuse for not realizing how sick you are. So what happens is, you live in, I would say, this box of everything I knew was within this box, and everything I didn't know was outside the box. And one day, if you're lucky, and this is generally what happens to alcoholics, all of a sudden the box gets smashed. It may get smashed by a car accident. It may get smashed by divorce papers. It may get smashed by being fired. It may get smashed, you know, your child might die. It may get smashed. A lot of things can smash that box. But something rocks your world. We call it hitting bottom, where all of a sudden the box disappears, and somebody shoved into my box the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. They shoved into my box the Triangle Club. They shoved into my box various members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And all of a sudden, my box got bigger. My box got bigger, and my box got bigger, and all of a sudden, you know, where I used to say I can't envision life without drinking, I can never stop drinking. All of a sudden, I start saying to myself, I can't envision drinking again. My whole mind, it says, what does it say? Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which are the driving force of these men's lives, are suddenly cast one side, and they become driven and motivated by a whole different set of ideas, emotions, and attitude. And also, and now, I'm great. I'm 3 months, I'm 6 months, I'm 9 months sober. I'm a year sober. And I got my new box. My new bigger box. And you know what's inside the box? Everything I know. You know what's outside the box? Here we go. Everything I don't know. I got some news for you. There's still more outside the box than inside the box. And all of a sudden, and I'm doing great with everything I know. I know everything now. Now, thank God I went to AA and I know everything. Until I'm 5 or 6 years sober and I'm sucking on the barrel of a gun. Or my life has fallen apart. Or my relationships are falling apart. Or something's wrong and I don't understand because I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not drinking. I'm doing everything they're telling me. I'm doing everything. That's what I told my sponsor once. I said, I'm doing everything. And I'm still, it's not working. I needed something, it's not working. I'm doing everything. I'm going to the meet, I'm doing everything. He said, you're doing everything? I said, yes. He says, you know, Russ, I think you're one of the rare ones. You got to go out and get sponsors like this. I don't even know if they make them anymore. I think you're one of the rare ones. I said, what? I said, I think you're one of the rare ones. One of the rare ones? The one of the rare ones? He says, yeah. And so I'm really excited about this because this goes back to my old theory that I'm unique. You know what I mean? This makes sense to me. Yeah. Finally, I've been telling my sponsor, you don't understand. I've been telling my sponsor I'm different. He finally sees the light. So he says, you must be one of the rare ones. I said, one of the rare ones? What do you mean? He says, well, they talk about it at every meeting. I said, I didn't know. I didn't. I said, you go to meetings, right? I said, yeah. So they talk about it every meeting. I said, I've never heard him talk about it. He says, Russell, they talk about it every meeting. You go. I said, I've never. He says, don't they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path? I said, well, yeah, they say that. They say that. I said, well, didn't you tell me you do everything? You've done everything, right? I said, yeah, I've done everything. He says, and it's not working for you, right? I said, right. I said, well, then you're one of the rare ones. This thing won't work for you. You've done everything AA has to offer. You've done everything, and it's not working, so you might as well leave. And he looked at me and says, you need to leave because AA is not for you. And I'm like dying. It's like a dagger in my heart because the only thing that's ever worked for me in AA, and now my sponsors tell me I got to leave because I'm one of the rare ones. And I'm sitting there like I want to commit suicide now. He says, no, stupid. He says, you don't have to leave. He says, but don't tell me you're doing everything, he says, or you know everything. He says, have you done your 4-step yet? I said, well, no, you know. I hadn't even done my 4-step, but you see, that's what alcoholics tell themselves. They say, I'm doing everything, because we don't want to sacrifice. We want, listen, I'm a remote control guy. I sit at home with the remote control. The remote control breaks. I don't watch TV. You don't think I'm going to get up to change channels, do you? Don't make it louder or small. I'm lazy. I want it delivered to me. I don't want to read the big book. I don't want to work. I don't want a sponsor that's going to tell me what to do. I want to come here to a meeting, get fed, and go out and think I know everything and then run my own life. Thank you very much. So I'm lazy. So the first, if things are not going well, or if I don't feel good, the first thing I hop on to is it's not working. I don't think I'm not working. I don't think there's something wrong with me. I blame you because whatever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. That's the way I think. That's part of the old ideas. Blame somebody else. Blame the traffic. Blame my boss. Blame this. Blame that. You know what I'm talking about? Blame everybody. Blame everybody. Just don't look at yourself. That's my deal. And I don't have to go to AA meetings. I don't have to go to Crazies Anonymous to think that way. I think that way naturally. I naturally think toxically and crazily in order to get myself in the jam, and it feels comfortable to me. As a matter of fact, you tell me not to think that way, I get mad at you. That's an alcoholic personality. You know, I get mad at people that tell me I'm full of crap. Even if I'm full of crap, I get mad. I get mad. You know, the truth, you can't handle the truth, like Jack Nicholson says. So I'm 5 years sober. I had to tell you the rest of the story, and I'm sitting in the... Let me tell you how serious this disease is. I'm 5 years sober, and I'm going to meetings for 5 bloody years. And I meet my sponsor, I'm sitting with him having coffee, and I'm once again telling him the problems I'm having in my life. I'm telling him about my problems. I'm telling him about my difficulties. My sponsor was not bright, not very bright. He never had good answers for my questions. He would, you know, one time my sponsor, but it was very strange. Sometimes, you know, one time I was not feeling well, and I was upset, and I was talking about it, and you know what he said to me when I told him about all my problems? You're not going to believe this. He said, how much sleep did you get last night? And I said, what the hell does that have to do with it? I'm telling you, he says, Russ, maybe you ought to go home. How much sleep? He says, I didn't get a lot of sleep. I was worried I had about 2 hours sleep or something. He says, why don't you go home and get some sleep? My life is falling apart. You know what I mean? He's saying, why don't you go home and get some sleep? Because if you're an alcoholic, you don't realize if you eat like an idiot or you don't sleep or you don't do these things, it actually affects the way you feel and the way you act. And well, what am I going to do? I went home and I went to bed and I got some sleep. And I wake the next morning, I woke up, he says, how are you doing? I says, I feel good. That's how I learned about hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Sometimes you think it's the most important thing in the world. You got to see 10 psychiatrists and pop 10 Xanax and all you need is a good night's sleep. You know how many guys I've sponsored? I can't even tell you how many guys I've sponsored who sit down to me at a table for dinner. And they're anxious and they're going crazy and they're going nuts. And I say, I order something. I said, what do you want? He says, I'm not hungry. I said, order something. He says, I'm not hungry. I said, I know. Eat. You're going to order something. You know, this is my old Jewish grandmother. Oh, you're going to order something. And I order them something. And they start eating. And they start eating. And they're eating their food. And I say, how's your soup? He says, it's good. He says, and I ask him, so how do you feel? He says, I feel okay now. You don't have to be real smart to be a sponsor. You know what I mean? It's dinner time. Eat. Alcoholics don't know about breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They don't know about going to sleep. They don't know about any of that stuff. They think it's some sort of, because they're so brilliant, they think it's some sort of massive psychological problem. You know what I mean? Sometimes they just have, you'd be surprised when an alcoholic eats dinner, how much better life becomes, you know? Especially if their sponsor's paying for it. I can tell you that. So he said to me, I'm going to 5 years of meetings, and he says to me, and I'm again talking to him. This was over at the old, I forgot the name of the place already. It was a restaurant in South Miami. So I'm eating with him at this place. I'm telling him once again about these terrible problems I'm having. And he in the middle of telling the problems, after I'm done with the problems, he says to me this. He always said this to me. That's what I hate about sponsors. I'm complicated. I'm complex. I need somebody who really understands psychology and everything. And he always asked me these yes and no questions. So he says to me, and he always asked me this question. I used to hate it. After I was done talking about this really serious problem, he'd say, so Russ, let me ask you something. How many meetings you go to? When was the last meeting you went to? I said, what do you mean? He says, when was the last meeting? I said, 2 days ago I went to a meeting. And he said, Russ, when you go to meetings, you feel good. Mm-hmm. When you don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. Mm-hmm. And I just looked at him, 5 years sober. He's probably said that to me about 50 times. I don't know how many times I heard meeting makers make it. I drank because I was, 5 bloody years I'm complaining to him. I'd go to a meeting here, I'd go to a meeting there, I'd go to about 3 meetings a week or something like that. I was really sacrificing. And all of a sudden, on that day, at that time, because I'm smart, and I'm managing my own life, and I'm trying, and I got, this meetings are good for other people, but I'm going to 3 or 4 meetings. I'm going to 3, people say to me, I'm going to 3 or 4 meetings a week. I said, well, who told you that 3 or 4 meetings was the number? Well, that's the number I picked out. Well, who told you that, what you think? You think alcoholism actually believes you? In other words, you think your form of toxic alcoholism, what you say to your alcoholism is, I have decided, based upon my vast experience and how I'm doing, using my brain, which is the problem in the first place, that 3 meetings ought to do it. So I can work, something that's been troubling me for the last 30 years that has caused me, like Dr. Carl Menninger says, to destroy myself for 30 years, that if I spend 3 hours a week, that's going to pretty much do it, because I live in wishful thinking land and I'd like that to believe that. So I've decided that you will go away and not bother me if I put in 3 hours a week. So I've decided, that's my decision. I decided that. So my sponsor would say, he said, so how many, and I'd say, he said, you go to meetings, you feel good. You don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. So I'm thinking to myself, 5 years sober, trial attorney. You go to meetings, you feel good. You don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. I walked out of the restaurant. You go to meetings, you feel good. You don't go to meetings, I'm driving home. You go to meetings, you feel good. You don't go to meetings. And it occurred to me, like out of the blue, this was like an amazing, that I can't even explain this. You may not even understand this. All of a sudden it hit me. You go to meetings, you feel good. You don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. Like a bolt from the blue. Like, I mean, I got it. You go to meetings, you feel good that it's not the wife. You understand? It's not the boss. It's not the money. Listen, you go to meetings. Now, you see, if a doctor said, take this pill, you'd be okay. I'd believe that. Take this pill. I believe that. He said, have 15 drinks every day. I believe that. But go to a meeting every day? I don't believe that. You know, so you go to meetings. And so from that day on, I started going. I stopped putting a limit. You know, because I got into that thing that we get into, balance. You know how alcoholics worry about balance? And I don't want to be like one of these A freaks like Russell. I want to have my life in balance. I used to walk into the bar at 4:30 in the afternoon. I'd leave at 4:30 in the morning. That's 12 hours of drinking, right? With a wife and kid at home. Balance. I don't know anything about balance. You know what I mean? So all of a sudden, from that day forward, I never worried. I never put limits on how many people I sponsor. I never put limits on how many meetings I go to. I'd go to at least one meeting a day. Sometimes I'd go to two. I'd go to five. It wouldn't even matter. I wouldn't feel guilty about it. I wouldn't feel crazy. I went. And you know what happened? I started feeling better, like almost immediately. I started feeling better. It's amazing. This is like phenomenal. It works. And you know, my sponsor used to say to me things like this. He says, you know, Russ, your best thinking on your best day got you in here. Until you have a healthy disrespect for respect for this disease and a disrespect for your own thinking, you ain't getting anywhere. Because you will talk yourself out of so much stuff that you think is crazy. So here I am in this box at 5 years or 10 years, and I think I know everything, and all of a sudden I'm running into reality, and it's beating the crap me again, and I don't understand what's going on, because I'm in AA, I'm reading the big book or anything like that, 15 years sober. Somehow, it's not working for me anymore. It's not working for me anymore. Now, in my case, it doesn't have to be in your case. Some guy came up to me, tapped me on the shoulder, because the Lord works in strange ways, and said, you ever been to a Bible study? I'm a Jewish kid from New York. I don't go to Bible study. I went to a Bible study. Somebody shoved a Bible into my box. My box got real big. You know, he shoved in the material that these guys based this program on. You know what it says, really, I haven't seen a person fail, it's thoroughly followed our path. The material I was running away from, the stuff that Dr. Bob and the good old timers, they said were absolutely essential. The book of James, you know, Sermon on the Mount, 1 Corinthians 13, they shoved that in. I went in there and all of a sudden my gosh got real big. And all of a sudden answers, a whole lot of other things changed. All of a sudden my whole life changed because, you know, when they shoved that in, you know how when they shove the big book into your box, you also shove in the Triangle Club? Well, they shoved the Bible in my box. They shoved it in Old Covenant Presbyterian Church. It just happened. I'm not ashamed of it. He says, we're not ashamed of that. It says, we encourage church membership. You know, I was like about 5 years into it before I read in the book. It says, we encourage church membership. I was doing what they said in the family afterward. And all of a sudden, I started meeting men who were 50 years sober and 60 years sober. And they weren't even alcoholics. And we were talking about the same stuff. And we could talk about the same stuff. And we were talking about the stuff we're talking here. You imagine how big that box got? Now I'm all of a sudden talking with alcoholics. I'm with mentors, I'm with church, I'm with the whole bit, you know what I mean? Because I didn't come here, when I first came here, I thought it was like an AA coffin. There's us, there's the earth people. Got to protect ourselves against the earth people. I go on the AA cruises, and the AA this, like it's like a giant ghetto. Because I'm not good enough to be with them. And the next thing I know, they tap me on the shoulder and says, will you be a deacon in the church? Will you start a ministry? Will you do this? And all of a sudden I find that, you know, like the entire world for me is like an AA meeting. That everybody's like an AA meeting. They were all basically the same, no matter who they are, whether you got alcoholism or not. It's the same fears, it's the same. You don't need to have a chip in your pocket to be my friend. And so it says right here on page 62, it's all about the four step, you know. It's all about how crazy you are and how not to be crazy and start seeing things about yourself. Because until you start seeing stuff about yourself, that's what the four step is about. Until you start taking inventory, you're not going to understand it. You're not going to see it. You're going to need to understand that when you go to get that guy to guide you through the jungle, you're going to, believe me when I tell you, you have no clue as to what the problem is. You only think you know what the problem is. You think the problem is your husband. You think the problem is your wife. You think the problem is your boss. You think the problem is money. It has nothing to do with that because there are people in this world that has every problem you have and it doesn't bother them. And it doesn't bother. The problem is something inside you. And you want something, that's Alcoholics Anonymous, because Alcoholics Anonymous says whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So don't make the mistake of thinking that you're upset because of your circumstances. Every problem, you don't suffer from any problems in here that isn't common to everybody on the planet Earth. And some people somehow are happy and content, like the Apostle Paul, I've learned to be content in all things. Some people live a decent life and feel good about themselves, even with the worst type of problems. And you'll run into those creatures in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they will amaze you. They will amaze you. Children die, and people die, and people have cancer, everything, and they're just sort of like going on. And you say, how does he do that thing? It's like supernatural. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. That they think, they say that's the root, being selfish and self-centered. I know they're not talking about you, because you guys seem pretty nice to me. But since I'm an alcoholic, and I know a little bit about me, and what I know about you is that every one of you is selfish and self-centered, and all you do is think about yourself. You know, if I scratch the surface long enough, if I put you in a certain position, in a certain thing, where I threaten a few things, you know, the bottom line is, all you're doing is thinking about you. You spend most of your time thinking about you. You're going to get in your car, you're going to start thinking about you. You're going to be driving home thinking about you. Tonight at home, you're going to be thinking about you. I know you're going to be thinking about you because that's all you think about because you're alcoholics. That's why you're here in the first place. Because I know that this book applies to everybody in here, not just me, except for you guys. So don't say Russell's saying I'm selfish and self-centered. This, if you're an alcoholic, this book, which we all agree with, is saying you're selfish and self-centered, and that you're ready for this. You're driven. Whether you know it or not, this is your problem. You're driven by 100 forms of fear. Fear and self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. Did you know that? You're driven by 100 forms of fear. You know what that means? That if you have figured out 10 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, 10 that you know of, and you suspect another 10, maybe, there's 80 going on that you don't even know about. There's 80 going on that you're not even aware of, you know, pushing your buttons. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some point in time we have made decisions based on self, which later places us in a position to be hurt. Listen, there's no decision I've ever made in my life, ever, where I didn't think it was the best decision for me. There's no person I was ever mad at that I didn't think I had a right to be mad at. There's no time I ever felt sorry for myself and I didn't think it was time to feel sorry. Everything I've ever done in my life I thought was the right deal. And I was a total banana. You know what I mean? The truth is, I need somebody else running my life. You know, what I really need is I need a keeper. That's what sponsors are for. They tell you you're stupid and stop thinking, and they'll do your thinking for you. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making, which I believe means that our troubles are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Which means, if you think I'm full of shit, you fit right into this mold. You understand what I'm saying? That proves you're an alcoholic, because alcoholics usually don't think this is right. You understand what I'm saying? Above everything, we alcoholics must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. It doesn't even, like, bruise us. It's like they go right for the kill. God makes that possible. Now, I know this sounds like a third step, and it is a third step, because God is the only thing that makes this possible. It seems no way of getting rid of it. And then they go into a whole bunch of things I'm not going to go into. I read it last week. But the bottom line is, after this deal, and after you turn your will and your life over to God, and after it says we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him, and we do that, they say, okay, now that if you've done that much, if you only do that much, now maybe you're ready to really look at yourself in a different way. Because now we're going to ask you to look at some things that you're not going to want to look at. We're going to have you make some lists. You know, we're going to have you, the first list, there's four lists, and I'm going to go through them real fast. The first list you guys should be excited about, it's a list of resentments. It's all those people that you hate and you're mad at or you're disturbed with, you know, because they screwed you. You know what I mean? And you know what's great when I run into guys that say, well, I don't resent anybody. You know, those guys are really in bad shape. I was one of those guys. You know the reason I couldn't do a four-step list? Because I didn't resent anybody. I wasn't mad at anybody. So how come after a vicious pounding over a period of 3 months and going down the tubes, when I finally sat down and made the list, I had 30 people on the list? I swear to God, when I told my sponsor I didn't resent anybody, I honestly believe that I didn't resent. That's how serious this disease is. I honestly believe, as I was on the phone complaining about this one, and my whole life was about complaining about people, places, and things. Thinking about people, places, and things. thinking about my life. You know, what was wrong with me? All my life is about complaining and bitching and moaning and worrying. And all of a sudden he says, make the fourth step. He says, no, I don't resent anybody. And believing that. Swearing that's true. How can I make a fourth step list if I don't resent anybody? All of a sudden, I don't know what happened, a week or two or three down the road, I sit down, you know, a few things happen. I went to a few meetings, you know, basically sort of people got in my face, stuff happened, and I sit down with a pen and a paper and I start writing, you know, and I, you know, first person on my list, my boss. I had been complaining about my boss for 3 bloody years. He's always threatening me with my job. He's always threatening to put my job ahead. You know, watch the hire, you know, fire. Why? Because he threatens me with my job. Also my boss. Then my cousin Valerie. Then, you know, this one. Then that one. All of a sudden, I had people on that list that never did anything for me except they were breathing on the planet. And I had good friends on the list, you know, and I didn't like them because they could buy their suits off the rack. You know what I mean? And, you know, and they didn't, and I was overweight. You know what I mean? I had stuff going on that list that was unbelievable. You know, the first thing is a list of resentments. And then they tell you what to do with the list of resentment, list of fears. You know what I mean? List of the problems having to do with sex things. And then they have this great list, which I think is the key to it, is notwithstanding the resentments and notwithstanding the problems you have and all that sort of stuff, or the resentments you have, where have you been at fault? Where you can no longer say, well, my wife did this or my husband did that, you know, and blame. Okay, what have you done wrong? You know, yeah, all I did was character assassinate, and then you start putting that, and then you start getting a clear picture of not only what your problems are, but the bad actor you are, and how screwed up you really are. And by the time you're done with your four-step list, you go from thinking how you've been the victim to you can't believe that people even put up with you. I mean, I got to the point, I went from feeling sorry for myself, like I was the victim, to get to the point where it says, man, I can't believe that they even. I'm sort of horrible. I'm sort of bad. I can't believe what they did. How they put up with me. And you know, then of course you do the fifth step, and we're going to talk about that next week. But the bottom line is, obviously, you're not going to get. And the reason I spent time on that, this is that just for that reason. Until you get to the point where you start understanding really how sick you could be, in your thinking. Forget about the drink. It's great that you don't drink, but until you get to the nuts and bolts of it and start understanding by listening to people, by listening to a sponsor, man, it's just great to have a sponsor that sort of gets in your face every once in a while and tells you stuff you don't want to hear, you know, instead of one that wants to be your, quote, friend, you know, and doesn't want to hurt your feelings. Sometimes, you know it says in the 12, the way we get a new perspective is by, how we get it is by 100 forms of humiliation, the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. We learn by getting hurt, by people telling us the truth that we don't want to hear. We may walk away for an instance, but we can't get them out of our mind. And we start thinking, you know, he's right. I'll tell you a story about that one day, not now. You know, what happened with the Jesuit priest. But, you know, these things, you know, when you start getting honest enough, where you want this program enough that you're willing to put yourself in the line of fire and willing to get hurt and have people tell you stuff that you don't want to hear, when you're willing to do that, that's the real growth. That's when you start separating the men from the boys. That's when you start stop feeling sorry for yourself and start really wanting to grow up and become mature. And but the first step is not only wanting this thing so bad, but realizing how sick your thinking is. Or even if you don't realize how sick your thinking is, even if you think you're okay, start to get into the idea that, man, there's all sorts of stuff going on me that I don't know. I need help with my mind, you know, not just the drinking, with my thinking, to try to figure out what's going on with me. So then we do the fourth step. You can read the book. There's charts in the book. You can go to your sponsor. If you want to do the fourth step, you know, listen, I don't have to tell you exactly how to do it. There's charts in the big book how to do it and everything, and next week we'll talk about step 5. Thank you very much.